Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 16th chapter, text 38. Chapter entitled King Chitraketu Meets the Lord. Vishaya Chisho Narapashavo Ya Upasate Vubutir Naparang Tvam Tesham Ashisha Isha Tadanuvina Shanti Yatara Jukulam Vishaya Chisho Narapashavo Ya upasate vibhutirna parang tvam Tesham ashisha isha Tadanu vinashtanti yata rajakulam Vishyatrisha. Eager to enjoy sense gratification. Narapashava. Man like animals. Yea, who? Upasate. Worship very gorgeously. Vibhuti. Small particles of the Supreme Lord, the demigods. Na. Not. Param. The Supreme. Tvam. You. Tesham. Of them, the demigods, anu, after, vinashyanti, will be vanquished, yata, just as, rajakulam, those who are supported by the government, when the government is finished. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. O Lord, O Supreme, unintelligent persons who thirst for sense enjoyment and who worship various demigods are no better than animals in the human form of life. Because of their animalistic propensities, they fail to worship your lordship, and instead they worship the insignificant demigods who are but small sparks of your glory. With the destruction of the entire universe, including the demigods, the benedictions received from the demigods also vanish, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. Purport. Bhagavad Gita 7:20 says, Kamais tais tararita gyana prapadyantena devataha. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto the demigods. Similarly, this verse condemns worship of the demigods. We may show our respect to the demigods, but the demigods are not worshipable. The intelligence of those who worship the demigods is lost, rittagyanaha. Because these worshippers do not know that when the entire material cosmic manifestation is annihilated, the demigods, who are the departmental heads of that manifestation, will be vanquished. When the demigods are vanquished, the benedictions given by the demigods to unintelligent men will also be vanquished. Therefore, a devotee should not hanker to obtain material opulence by worshiping the demigods, but should engage in the service of the Lord, who will satisfy all his desires. Akama sarma kama ova moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether full of all material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, a person who has broader intelligence must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Bhagavatam, 2nd canto, 3rd chapter, 10th sloka. This is the duty of a perfect human being. One who has the shape of a human being, but whose actions are nothing but those of an animal, is called Narapashu or Dvipadapashu, a two-legged animal. A human being who is not interested in Krishna consciousness is condemned herewith as Narapashu. Om Agyana Timuranda Shyaganjana Shalakaya Chakshwarmali Taminatasma Shri Gurubhena Maha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankayate Grim Yakipatamahan Bande Shri Gurum Dhiratanam. The theme of this verse is repeated often. We've heard on innumerable occasions how this human form of life is meant for self-realization. We have no other business. Everything else is secondary. According to our level of realization, we assign our priorities in life. Therefore, one has to take special care and consideration in understanding what is his position. Whether I am brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, we have only one priority, which is to continually aspire to serve the Supreme Personality of God, regardless of our station in life. Dharma sutnustata pungsam vishvaksena katasya no padiyat radiratim shrama eva hi kevalam. This verse is in the Bhagavatam. It's very edifying. It puts a lot of concepts together in one place. That's the meaning of edification. That you can do anything, dharma sutnustata pungsam, according to your dharma. But if it doesn't satisfy, if it doesn't please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it is shrama eva hi kevalam. It is a useless waste of time. So we have to know, we have to be able to appreciate what Prabhupada emphasized. Why did he build these temples? He built these temples for association. He said, I'm building these temples only to give devotees an opportunity to worship and serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Said, otherwise we don't need these temples. When someone becomes a little serious, he comes and he gets trained up. He sees the devotee in the temple offering their obeisances and he wants to follow. Not imitate, he wants to follow. Anusara, not anukara. Prabhupada gave that two words. Follow, not imitate. So we have to carefully understand the difference. And here we see that many people are worshiping demigods. And there are, even you see in certain areas of the society, people are following this process according to some cultural consideration. Oh, that we have to do some Ganesh Puja, we have to do some Devi Puja. I mean, there's 33 million demigods. How much puja can you do? In one lifetime, you cannot satisfy all the demigods. In millions of lifetimes. So what is the point? It says, one who worships the demigods is less intelligent, just by this one consideration. But people are thinking, no, if I worship Devi, I will get certain benefits. If I worship Ganesh, I will have certain obstacles removed. So these are material considerations. Lord Krishna here in Vrindavan, he gave us the perfect example. When Nanda Maharaj was gathering all the necessary paraphernalia for Indra Yajna, Krishna clearly refuted all of his excuses. Nanda Maharaj was giving so many excuses. No, we need the rain. We need this. We need that. Just like a person worshiping the demigods. Yes, no, I need to do this. I must do this. I must worship Saraswati. I must. These are all material considerations. And having established the conclusion that we should worship this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has appeared as the King of Mountains, Giriraj, and who fulfills the needs of everyone, we chant this mantra in the worship of Krishna Balaram and Giriraj. Hantaya Madhira Balahari Dasavaya Yadramakrishna Taraspurashak Pramodak Manang Tanoti Sahagogana Yostira Paniyasuya Vasakandara Kandambulai. Krishna is providing everything for everyone, not just human beings, every living entity, 8,400,000 species of life. And this is being done without the worship of the demigods. The dog is not worshiping the demigods. Actually, the dog is offending the demigods. He's going, and how much he cares for the demigods? He's urinating. You see, all over, there are these, someone is putting some small little deity in Vrindavan. Everywhere you go, there's some little shrine. Mostly these are shrines to Hanumanji, like that. But other ones are to demigods. And do the dogs care? No, they are simply passing urine. So is he catching any offense? What is his offense? Not that we take such a harsh position. Prabhupada said we offer respects to the demigods. But there's a big difference between respect and worship. I may respect a person for his position, the Prime Minister of India. I respect him, but I don't worship him. But there are those who do. There are those who worship movie stars and starlets. Actually, they worship them. Their whole life is consumed by thinking of this or that Bollywood, Hollywood personality. Completely consumed. And what will be the destination? I remember one time when I was going to Makrana to get some marble. So we have to associate at that time with the Thakur of Makrana, Thakur Vijay Singh. Very nice gentleman, provided all the marble and marble work for our Bombay temple and for so many temples, including Srila Prabhupada's Samadhi. But this town, Makrana, is like a hellish planet. It is in the middle of the desert. There is no facility for devotees. There is one temple, very ancient temple, Char Bhuj. That story was there when the Mughals came. He was hidden in a well. It seems that wells are very convenient for hiding deities. So he was concealed in the well, and then after some time he was again reestablished. And that deity is there, very ancient. We know that these Char Bhuj deities are thousands of years old, if not more. Like Ananta Vasudeva in Bhubaneswar, worshipped by Lord Ramachandra. So this means 2 million years. So this Char Bhuj deity, we would go and we would take darshan. But they don't have unfortunately, their priorities straight with regards to who should receive the most opulent worship. But they have established in every home, they have a deity of Devi. But why? Why do they have that deity? So in this mud palace that passes for some type of, it's in the middle of the desert. That's what they're built out of. Old rock covered with mud, ancient. So he has upstairs a small room which has the deity of Devi. Sitting on the back of the tiger, a multi-arm, is very ferocious looking. I'm saying, why are you keeping Devi here? He says, oh, I'll show you. So he took me upstairs one time. And we could never eat anything that they offered because they have no separate kitchen. And finally, we had to cook for ourselves. Feeling compassion on us, the Thakur's wife, who was a strict vegetarian, from a Marwari family. Actually she's from Madhya Pradesh, MP. The royal family in MP. But very sweet old lady. She was strictly vegetarian. No contaminated foodstuffs ever entered her kitchen. So she would cook personally for us. Because otherwise we were starving. We would go there and starve in the middle of the desert. So he took me upstairs to this room, and just after he brought me in, one man dragged a goat in by the neck with a rope around. And on the shelf above the deity, they have bottles of liquor. And they brought the goat in, and they took the liquor and they shook it on the goat. And if the goat shakes like this, Devi has accepted. They immediately take it out and they cut its throat, and then they eat the goat. So they're keeping this Devi only to gratify their senses and justify their meat eating. And Prabhupada says, but it's actually only supposed to be done once in a month on the dark moon night like this. That if one has this, but he has to go through all these rituals. But it's just abbreviated. Sprinkle a little liquor if the goat shakes. They take it away and slit its throat. And then they feast sumptuously on this meat. So this is what the worship of the demigods is all about. Reduced to the most simplistic consideration. And it doesn't matter if you're worshiping to eat meat, or if you're worshiping for knowledge, or you're worshiping for some good wife. It's all the same consideration. Because it means that you're less intelligent. Because all these things, yasya devi para bhakti yata deve tata guru tasya iti katitaryata prakashyante mahatmanaha. One who has implicit faith in the spiritual master in Krishna, for him all the Vedas, all the purports are immediately revealed. Everything is revealed. So why are we adopting now, after coming to devotional service, why again are we adopting some cultural considerations? But I have to go to my family home because it's Durga Puja. What is that? That's okay. I mean, you know, there's certain considerations. If I want to bring to my family some prasadam from Krishna Balaram Mandir and speak to them and try to extricate them from the griham undakupam, the dark well of material existence, where people are punak punas charvata charvananam, continually engaged in chewing the chewed, then that's okay. That's my duty. I go there at that time because they're all going to be there. And they're all focused. My duty is to wake them up and say, you are wasting your time worshiping this demigod, demigoddess. You're wasting your time. Whatever you get from her is temporary. But again, less intelligent will think of saying, okay, temporary. I'll get some things this life. And then I'll get another human birth. No. Prabhupada didn't say that. Prabhupada said, Krishna can give you anything. He's very kind to the devotees. He said this in Mayapur. But you will have to take another birth. He didn't say human birth. He said another birth. And he said there will be a gap of millions of years. Why millions of years? Because that is the time spent in Narak. And going through the 8,400,000 species of life again. There'll be a gap of millions of years. So someone is thinking, no, no, I will just worship. I'll provide for my family by hook or crook. We hear this a lot in some places. By hook or crook. By hook or crook, we should do anything to satisfy the spiritual master in Krishna. Yes, that is authorized. But not by hook or crook. I need to, Charvak Muni, Charvak. Beg, borrow, or steal, but whatever you do, get ghee. This is the mentality. Beg, borrow, or steal, but get ghee. And for what? To get some prestige in your community. I am a big man. I have so many big buildings. Just see my opulence. But what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita about that? I'll have to think now, that verse. The purport is that by accumulating all these things, Ishvaraham aham bogi siddham balavan sukhi. Krishna is the source of all knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Ishvaraham aham bogi siddham balavan sukhi. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram. Jai Shri Shri Radha Shyam. So what does that mean? Ishvaraham aham bogi. I am the controller. I am the head of the householder. I am the head of the company. I am the head of this organization. up to I am the president of this country or that country. Ishvaraham aham bogi, siddham balavan. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. This is illusion. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. The next verse, I don't remember the Sanskrit. I have so many enemies, and I have killed them all. And in the future, I will kill more. But he doesn't realize who the real enemies are. Lust, greed, anger. These are the real enemies. And so why are we not attending to those? But again, it comes back to priorities. Chuchaketu Maharaj, he cannot, we understand from reading in the previous verses that no one can offer such prayers to the Lord without first being purified, spiritually realized. It is not possible. In the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains how Prahlad Maharaj is a Mahajan, although a five-year-old boy, how he's Mahajan. Of course, he heard from Narada Muni while in the womb of his mother how important the association of devotees is. The same as Narada Muni, how he became Narada Muni, by associating with the Bhagavatas and rendering service and taking their remnants. But Prahlad Maharaj, five-year-old boy, Prabhupada said, Lord Nrisimhadev put his hand on his head. So either he was already purified because Nrisimhadev touched him, or he became purified because Nrisimhadev touched him. In either case, he became purified. He was purified. And he offered wonderful prayers. But he asked no benediction for himself. Nothing for himself. He said, I don't consider that our relationship is some material exchange, banik. I've said in a previous class, but that word is there, banik. And we know that here locally in the local language it's called baniya. So baniya means some mercantile person or a mercantile consideration. That I do something for you, you do something for me. But that is not our relationship with Krishna. Our relationship with Krishna is sarva dama pratyaja mame kam sharanam bhaja. We surrender everything, even religion. And what is the worship of demigods? This is religion. This is mundane religion. This is the definition of mundane religion. Otherwise, why does Krishna say sarva dama pratyaja? He doesn't mean to give up real religion. He means to give up false religion. Even the Christians, they have that saying, thou shalt have no false gods before me. So these are all false gods. So it is a little difficult, I know, in India. Everyone is brought up in that culture. But you see in Srila Prabhupada's life and teachings, was there any time where we're seeing that he's worshipping the demigods? No. He never mentions it. He was always worshipping Radha Govinda. Radha Govinda and Jagannath. And this is the example that we follow. This is the perfect example. Spiritual master is giving us everything, including the perfect example. And we do him a great disservice by deviating from his instructions. There's nowhere in Prabhupada's books where it says to worship the demigods. Sometimes he mentions that one worships this demigod for this benefit, or one worships. But he's just giving anecdotal example. He's not saying you should do. He's just saying some people do. At the gopis, they worship goddess Katyayani. They were worshipping to get Krishna. They weren't worshipping to get some mundane personality. We drove through, I just came back driving. I drove to Mayapur and back. A very nice drive. I've done it before. When I was building Prabhupada Samadhi, I drove there just to, my wife had, although we lived in India for so many years, we'd never really been any place but Vrindavan. There was, we had no, we weren't thinking I should go see this place or go see that place. But in the summertime, she wanted to take a trip, and she had never been to Mayapur. I said, okay. So we took the kids, put them in the Samurai, and those times it was Suzuki Samurai, and we drove to Mayapur. And of course, India is a beautiful country. There are so many things wonderful about India. And there's one thing is you don't want to get stuck during some festival time, like this Vishwakarma Puja. So we were just driving there and we ran into Vishwakarma Puja everywhere. And what is Vishwakarma Puja? There, it means everyone takes the opportunity to worship Vishwakarma and get drunk. Everybody was drunk. It was just like some, I don't know what you can say. I've never seen so many drunk people in the course of a couple of days. Everyone we met on the road was drunk, mostly at night, because we're driving when it's cool, but all drunk. And we're saying, what is the occasion? Oh, Vishwakarma Puja. So I don't understand what getting drunk has to do with worshiping Vishwakarma, but you know, I don't have any, you know, it's a lot of different things. Like I said, this worship of the demigods is very, very unfortunate situation. So we have to be very careful about our priorities. And if we have any questions, then we have our God brothers, God sisters, we have Srila Prabhupada's books, we can ask, what do you think? My family's inviting me home for this puja or that puja, should I go? And the answer should be only if you can preach. If you're just going to be a participant in some ritual, then no. Because then you're giving some appearance of credibility. You're participating. You don't want them to think that, oh, this is okay. You know, when we joined Krishna Consciousness, we all came from mostly Christian or Jewish or this background. We never, in those days, we never went home to visit our families. And we were very strongly criticized from many quarters. But we would encourage our parents to come to the temple. Because that was the test. Why should I go to my house? Vishnu Jan Maharaj used to call it impure reminiscence. Well, I have the memories of all so much nonsense activities. You know, the family, pets, this place, that place. Who needs such memories? Impure reminiscence. But rather, if they come to the temple, by coming to the temple, my parents met Srila Prabhupada. What advantage would I have had to go to their affair? It's nothing. But they got the opportunity to meet Srila Prabhupada. So we should bring our families to the temple and let them see what real worship is. And then maybe they'll understand. This is so important. But we should never participate in these souls, especially if one is brahmachari. You know, if one is grihastha, he may be forced, thinking that if I don't go, the family will cut me off. I'll have no inheritance. But we had no such consideration when we joined the temple. In America, we're all coming from so-called rich families, Prabhupada said. When we joined, we were all disinherited. Very strongly disinherited. Loss of millions of dollars. But at what cost? To keep in that favor of these relatives, one has to compromise all of his spiritual principles and ideals. So we should try to understand, even, again, I'm sorry to have to quote the Christians, but they say, what profiteth a man if he gains the whole world but loses his eternal soul? But even they know this. So how is it that somehow, sometimes we don't? Tamas tais ter rita jnana. We have to be convinced Not sort of convinced. We have to be firmly convinced. You know, don't be afraid, my parents will be angry if I disrespect. We're not disrespecting the demigods. We say, no, the demigods are servants of Lord, of Krishna. If one serves Krishna, automatically he serves all of the demigods. And you can explain, can you serve all 33 million demigods? No, they cannot. But if we worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, automatically all those demigods are pleased. They're all served. It's a very common sense thing. Unfortunately, common sense is not as common as it should be. Let me read the verse again. O Lord, O Supreme, unintelligent persons who thirst for sense enjoyment and who worship various demigods are no better than animals in the human form of life. Because of their animalistic propensities, they fail to worship your lordship, and instead they worship the insignificant demigods, who are but small sparks of your glory. With the destruction of the entire universe, including the demigods, the benedictions received from the demigods also vanish, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. So if one has to appear in some function where there's a worship of demigods, one has to make sure that he properly represents the spiritual master, the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, and make some effort to gently remind anyone in that assembly that these demigods are simply servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like Lord Krishna did to his father Nanda Maharaj. And everyone, especially in Braj, they know this. And actually I've seen in the last few years, it's become very common now that people are worshiping, they're doing Ganesh Puja. And they even have a name for it called Bombay Ganesh Puja. Bombay Ganesh Puja. I don't know why. How is Ganesh Puja coming from Bombay? But because because the practice now is becoming popular as it was popular there. So this popularity thing, so many things can become popular. What is the point? So many nonsense things become popular. That doesn't mean that now they have some authority. But people are doing these Ganesh Pujas now, even in Braj. So this is, in one sense, it means we have to preach more strongly. Especially here, there's a lot of misconceptions, even after so many years. When I would go in the course of my service to meet various authorities, in the Mathura Vrindavan Development Authority or in the Sales Tax Office, I would always bring prasadam, some small books, and preach, because they don't know who we are personally. They only hear rumors, and the rumors they hear about us, especially the foreigners, they're not very nice. Not very nice. And unless you're out there meeting these individuals face to face, these rumors will persist. So Prabhupada always encouraged us to preach in this way, to go out and meet everyone. You know, there's so many. I mean, sometimes it's a chore. There's so many petty bureaucrats. This municipality, Nagarpalik, this, that, Kacheri, all these things. But it's important. I can give one example. At one point, one gentleman who I was preaching to in the sales tax office, He was on his way out, so he gave me a tip. He said the incoming administration, new sales tax officer, they have a priority list of audit targets, and we were right there at the top of the list, ISKCON, to be audited by the sales tax office, because they had some doubts about whether or not we were collecting tax, and if collecting it, we were remitting it to the proper authorities. So they specifically named our restaurant and our gift shop. They said, you are selling things back here which are not religious paraphernalia. Only japa, mala, and this, but all such other trinkets and lockets. He said, this is all taxable. So he warned me. He said, get your books in order, 1 and 2. So I'm new to India at that time, only a couple of years. But he was very straightforward. So I went back, I told the temple president. Oh, okay. But then he asked one of his advisors, and his advisor said, no, don't worry about it. And then when he came to me and he said, that my advisor said, don't worry. I said, who is he? I said, the sales tax officer himself said that there will be an audit. The problem is the temple president didn't realize that this so-called assistant was what we call a dalal. Does that word make sense in Hindi? Dalal, middleman. They get in between some and act like a commission agent. And so he didn't care because for them it presents an opportunity for them to step in and say, oh, I can fix this. I can fix your problems. I'll go in between. So when they didn't listen, sure enough, the audit took place. They come in. They don't announce. They come in and they observe what you're doing. They see, they come into the restaurant, they buy something, they look at the parchi, whether tax is collected or not, to what level, and then they subpoena your books. They come in. And I had also told Kapoor, who was our munim, who was our treasurer at the time, and he was concerned because he knew. So he had done the right thing. He had gotten everything in order. But it didn't matter. Once they audit you, it's called stare decisis. It's a fixed fine. They know, and it was 1 lakh. And they know most people are just going to pay it. They don't want to be bothered. But because they had included the samadhi in the audit, which we weren't originally, because we're taxing, you know, the samadhi we filed for every truckload of marble, we filed what's called a 32 form, Bhatti's form, for sales tax exemption. So we had methodically and meticulously observed all those rules and regulations. And so I knew we had all our papers together. And when they ordered, I presented them all. Every piece of marble, every quintal, every ton, everything was there. No, nothing, because they wanted to say, oh, you're selling the marble on the side. So I said, I'm not going to. And the temple had no money. They just came to the samadhi and said, oh, you pay it. You pay the fine, 1 lakh. Because the samadhi, we had money. After struggling for so many years, one guy brother was very considerate after their one was quite negligent. And I approached him and I explained the situation to him and I gave him our projected costs for so many years and he said, yes, it is my obligation. I have inherited it. I will fulfill it. And so we got the funds and we put them in the bank. As soon as those funds were in the bank, all of Vrindavan knew. And the samadhi became a target for people trying to squeeze out some money by putting some stop work orders and so many things. But this sales tax office, this audit was a problem. So I said, no, I won't pay the fine, but I will challenge it. But to challenge an audit in India, you have to put a deposit equal to 1/3 of the fine, which meant that I had to put out 33,000 rupees. Not a small amount in those days, in the early 80s. But I was keen to fight it because on principle, I had done nothing wrong. We had followed all the rules. So the case was going and the lawyer was waiting for an opportunity. I could see. The lawyer was hired by this temple president's advisor. So he was an adversary. He was not our man. At the first opportunity, he came to me and said, oh, the judge is willing to take a bribe. You can settle the case now for 50,000. I said, how is that settling for 50,000? That means I accept guilt. That means I lose my deposit. So So I lose 33,000 plus 50, that's 83,000. I said, no. I said, I'll not pay this bribe. You know, we don't, as Americans in general, we don't accept this principle. We don't pay bribes. But sometimes it causes some inconvenience in India, because we have this training. So I pursued the case in court, and it kept going. And one day, so what happened was, my assistant said, no, no, you should pay. This is how they do things in India. I said, no. I said, you don't know anything. You don't know if this person is telling you the truth or not. So he gave, so I said, okay, we'll do one thing. Because he was so insistent. I said, I will show you. I said, I will agree that we will make the first step in this regard your way, and then we will go do something my way. So I gave the lawyer 20,000 rupees as a so-called down payment. And then I took my assistant at that time, and I said, now we're going to Agra, and we're going to go see the head officer, the regional tax officer, the RTO, the big guy. He's the king. Sales tax is one of the most lucrative positions you can get in the Indian Administrative Service. And they sit, they're so well protected. They live in what's called Judge's Compound in Agra. Armed guards, everything is very secure. So I went to him because I knew him. Even though this case is going on for 18 months, I never once exploited my relationship with this man and said, look, could you please fix this for us? Because that minimizes us. Why would I go and ask this person for a favor in this regard, if I've done nothing wrong especially? So I came to him and I said, look, and he wants, of course, they always want to bring out the chai and the snacks. I said, no numbkin, nothing. We're here. I have a question. Usually some small talk about his children in college in America and stuff like that, but I said, I'm concerned. I need to clear something up. I brought my associate assistant. I said, the lawyer handling our case, and he's very aware of our case, is telling me that the judge is willing to take a bribe to settle the case. I need to hear from you. What is the situation? Now, by going there, I've done a couple things. By asking him, I've let him know that a judge, under his authority, he's in charge of all the judges, the sales tax appeal judge, court judges, that somebody under him is asking for a bribe, and whether or not he's involved, because it's a challenge, that because I'm implying that he could be involved. He could be getting a cut. And if he's not involved, I'm letting him know that his judge has cut him out of the equation and is taking a bribe on his own without including him. So I'm trying to play all these cards. It's like chess. So he says, I'm not sure, let me check. He picks up the phone, he dials the judge, and then he asks him straight out, are you looking for a bribe from ISKCON to clear this case? Now whoever this judge is, he's been put on notice. So what's he going to say? Yes? He tells him, no, why would I be taking a bribe? He says, in fact, the case is going in their favor. Okay, now that tells me two things. That the lawyer knows that the case is going in our favor, and he wanted to take the bribe and put it in his pocket by himself. And then it would look like the case was cleared because he paid the judge. But in reality, the case was already being cleared. It's a very tricky situation. So learning all these things in India allowed me to continue the construction of Prabhupada Samadhi with minimum interference from this type of situation. And 1 week after that meeting, I got called back to the sales tax office in Kacheri, and in a very darkened room. I mean, I don't know where they get these conference rooms from the 1800s that have never been renovated. One bare light bulb hanging down. It's winter. There's no heat. There's an ancient table. And all these prosecutors are on one side, and me and my lawyer, this not my lawyer, but the Tamil president's lawyer, are sitting there. And the judge is speaking in very low tones. And at first, I don't understand what's going on. Because he's speaking Hindi, I can understand a little bit. But he's low, and as he's talking, all these guys next to him start to hang their heads. He's obviously chastising them. So I asked the lawyer, I said, what's he saying? And he's telling them this case should never have been brought before the court. It had no merit. A waste of the time and the money of the court, taxpayer, everyone involved. And he went on chastising these guys for about 5 minutes. And then he just, with a wave of his hand, he dismissed everybody. So I got up also. And he looked at me and said, no, sit. And then my lawyer sat down and he said, no, you go. It was just me and the judge. And when everybody's gone, what does the judge do? He apologizes. I'm very sorry that this happened. It should never have happened. Says, but I was in a conflict of interest. I could not. I said, I felt it would be the best situation for me to be in charge because confidentially I can tell you now I'm a life member. But if that fact had been known, he would have had to recuse himself. If he had shown any favor prior to the facts being corroborated, it could have jeopardized the case. But this is how preaching works. You never know. So we preach to everyone. We don't just think, oh, why should I waste my time preaching to this bureaucrat? Because he's going to be changed in 2 years anyway. And then I have to do it to the next guy. This DM, this SP, again DM, again SP. No. We preach. They need to know who we are and what we stand for. We stand for Srila Prabhupada's perfect society, honest in all respects. Samo damo tapaso cham, shanti raja mevicha, gyanam vijnanam astakyam, brahma karma subhavajam. Interesting thing about this verse. Many times Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse and he said, Samo, he didn't say first Samo, he said, Satyam Samo damo tapaso cham. I always wondered why. Why is Prabhupada adding this word, Satyam Samo damo? But it's clear that in the absence of truth, all other such qualities are compromised. So he always said, Samo, Satyam Samo Damo Tapaso Cham. So we have to be, we should never be, our integrity should never be questioned. Because once it is questioned, I can tell you what a disaster it is. I've had people in the government come up to me and say, your society is nothing but a shell for conducting illicit real estate transactions. Genuinely, sincerely, they believed it 100%. And what do you think they tell about it to their other officers, their other peers, their other counterparts? Yes. So do we need this type of reputation? No. So we should always avoid any compromise, you know, of our spiritual principles, codes of conduct. These things are essential in order for us to carry this movement on for the next 10,000 years. Otherwise, it will not last. It will become infiltrated by demigod worshippers. So be very careful. Any questions, comments? Critiques, Prem Prakash, you have to speak loud, the microphone's up here. Louder.
Getting things straight, and all the students who are basic, who are needful, But Prabhupada, you know, like, he was very strong about all this, and you know, he was independent. So I feel like, even you know, I have got unravelled with the small criteria. It's like, I just want to keep very honest. Staying in Vrindavan, I don't really like to go out of there too much. But sometimes when I get this urge, the other devotees, okay, let me go on Monday and offer, there is a chance to propagate the knowledge. Maybe some special intentions or thoughts, but why?
Supreme Prakash Prabhu is expressing that even in his own experience, there is some emphasis on certain things which he didn't see Srila Prabhupada was emphasizing. With regards to things like Vastu is a category that's useful for, that, and in consideration mostly with building temples. Some person, if he wants Vastu for his home, why does he want Vastu for his home? Because he wants to understand configuration for wealth and health. So those are material considerations. When we build a temple, we don't consider for wealth or health. We consider proper situation according to the recommendations based on the Shilpa Shastra. So it's just like codes of construction. We don't abandon our intelligence and discharge our engineer when we build a building and say, no, we're devotees, we can build a building based on our devotion. No. We use qualified people. But that's a different thing. That's not worshiping the demigods. That's using your intelligence to build a building for Krishna. I'm not an engineer. But devotees can do many other things without being engineers. We use engineers because we want to be safe. We want to be sure that this building will last for 1,000 years for the glory of Krishna. If someone is taking so much consideration for his house, why? Why is he taking it? To give it to his children, to please his wife, those considerations. But his priorities are missing. And so if you're going to Vrindavan Parakram, you want to offer milk to Gopishwar Mahadev, why? What is the... You know, we know that the spiritual master and Krishna are automatically giving us the opportunity simply by their service to satisfy everyone. So then I'm doing it just because other people are doing it? What is the impetus? I'm doing it for some benefit? What benefit? What can I get that I cannot get from serving the Supreme Personality of God in Krishna? If one is thinking like that, then he can only come to one conclusion. That it is just a sentiment. It is just a sentiment. And it should not be done. Like I said, it says here clearly, we offer our respects. You know? And what does that mean? I don't blaspheme the demigods. You know, this is not my position. They are also servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're serving Him perfectly. I'm serving Him imperfectly. They're doing their duties exactly as they are commissioned. You know? They're not failing in any regard. Except Indra when he became angry. We all know that story. And what was the result? Then he had to come down in a very contrite, sorrowful mood and apologize. So we should take these things, and all the examples are there. We're reading Krishna book. We see, so much emphasis on how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead exclusively. Exclusively. Mat karmakrin, mat paramo, mat bhakta sangavajata, nirvaira sarva bhuteshu, yasamameti pandava. What? We have exclusive. We're always thinking of Krishna. Man mana bhava mad bhakta. It doesn't say think of Krishna sometimes, think of the demigod sometimes. Man mana bhava mad bhakta, mad yavji man muskara. There's no. So anything other than that, we're using our small brains to make some adjustment, some calculation. Any other questions? Comments? Town president's looking at me. It's time for breakfast. No, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.